Now, stark warning from America. Violence could re-emerge in Northern Ireland if progress is not made in dealing with the legacy of the Troubles.
If you walk down parts of Belfast, you are still confronted by concrete barriers separating communities. Upwards of what, 90% of the young people still go to divided, schools, single tradition schools. Neighborhoods are still divided. I don't see the society sowing the seeds of its own normalization, of its own unity, if neighborhoods and schools are still divided. And what worries me in that kind of an environment, particularly where politics are not shown to be making progress, alienation will continue to fester, and violence, I fear, could very well reemerge as a characteristic of daily life. So it's premature to put Northern Ireland, as much as we'd like to, into the outbox of problem solved. I'd love for it to be there, and I look forward to that day, but quite honestly, it is not there. It is not there yet.
That's the worrying message from the former American diplomat Richard Haass. He, of course, chaired 6 months of talks and flags, parades and Northern Ireland's past last year. He made his remarks to a US government committee yesterday. He also said the recent controversy over secret letters to so-called on the runs did not justify any party walking away from the ongoing negotiations at Stormont.
Virtually all I know about these letters is what I have learned from public exchanges over the past few weeks. It is my understanding that the letters essentially inform recipients that there was insufficient evidence to pursue or prosecute them should they return to the United Kingdom. But it is also my understanding that the letters make clear that prosecution could come about if new information regarding violations of the law came to light. In short, the letters did not offer amnesty. And I know of nothing in their content that would justify anyone walking away from the process we are discussing here today.
So as America gets ready to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, Northern Ireland's political stalemate and problems have been laid bare for all to see. The Ulster Unionist, Tom Elliott, former leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, with us now. What's your reaction to what Haass is saying then, Tom?
Well, good morning, Stephen. Obviously, Dr. Haass has a right to his opinion, and he has clearly exercised that by giving the evidence or the information at this committee. And I suppose we would clearly like in the Ulster Unions Party, and I'm sure others would like to have the opportunity to do the same, to give our evidence and information as to how we see it, because that's Dr. Haass's opinion, we have our opinion. And it is unfortunate that he is, labouring over some sort of threat of violence if all this isn't agreed, and it's certainly not the Ulster Unionist Party that's going to go back to any violence. I think we need to be mindful that we're not encouraging people to return to violence.
Well, there's nobody encouraging people to return to violence, but is he right or is he wrong? Do you think violence could reemerge if progress isn't made? Is he right or not?
Well, whether progress is made or not, Stephen, you always have the danger of violence re-emerging.
So he's right.
Of course he is. He's right he's right also, or I'm right also, that even if progress isn't made, that violence could re-emerge. And we do have violence. It's not that we're living in a totally peaceful society, Stephen. We still have Republicans and loyalists out there who are intent on creating violence and creating on murder and mayhem. So, we are living with that at the moment. We don't want it to get any worse. But the point about it is we just can't accept any deal for the sake of it. I think that there has to be a realistic prospect of making it work. And I suppose that's the difficulty that we had, was that we didn't see it working for the broad section of unionist people.
Let's just remind ourselves what your leader, Mike Nesbitt, said in terms of the Haass talks.
I would say 80%. Maybe even 90% of it is ready to go over the line. So there's not a lot left, but what is left is serious.
So he was 80 or 90% there. What was left?
Well, I think, Stephen, that's probably quite right, that there was quite a lot of it was, I suppose, coming close to realisation. But the fact is, there were, and Mike highlighted this, was that there were very serious issues still to be dealt with. And those issues proved to be a significant barrier.
But if he was that close, if your party leader, Mike Nesbitt, was that close, let's say 90% close, why run away? Why not stay in there and sort out the final 10%?
I think we have been staying there, Stephen. You can't accuse us of running away at that time. We stayed the course to the 31st of December. We stayed since in the party leaders' talks. indeed, we tried our best to get resolutions, but the problem was every time a suggestion came forward, some other parties wouldn't agree anything outside of the Haas 7 proposals. So we were left virtually with stalemate, and that was a difficulty. Even though we were trying to find accommodation, others just weren't prepared to accept anything outside of Haas 7. So, you know, it wasn't a very sound basis for continuing negotiations, but as always, we're willing and prepared to try and find resolutions, but we will not have a resolution that is totally unacceptable to unionists.
Well, Richard Haas has made it clear that the OTR issue is no excuse. He made it clear what many other commentators have said. If you take the political chat out of it, within those letters was always the case that if fresh evidence came forward, someone could be prosecuted, whether they had a letter or not. They were not an absolute amnesty, and they never were.
I think that's right, Stephen, but the point is there was such underhand backdoor work ongoing at that particular time. Like there is no commentator has indicated to me, there is no political representative has indicated to me outside of Sinn Féin that they were aware of any letters being issued. We always knew that Sinn Féin were putting the item of on the runs on the table. They always wanted it discussed. They always indicated that, look, this is a matter that needs resolved. But
for example, Brian Rowan, obviously formerly of the BBC, now a security journalist, he made it very clear that when he was in the BBC, he was reporting these issues in 2001, 2002, 2003. But do you concede, and I think you just have, that those letters never were an absolute amnesty? You concede that, don't you?
Well, yes, but it obviously gave people some comfort. But going back, and some cover actually as well, going back to the point you made about Brian Rowan, I don't think there was at any stage that Brian Rowan ever said in the public media that there were letters issued, and I think that's the key to it. We were never aware of a process that contained letters that were giving them letters of cover and letters of comfort.
It doesn't really matter whether there were letters or whether they were verbal, does it? It matters what the substance was, what they equated to, and what they equated to, some would argue, was a statement of fact. A statement of fact that the police are not looking for you currently, but you are conceding this morning, Tom, that that within those letters was also the statement that if fresh evidence came forward, then those people could be pursued. So for anyone calling them an amnesty, they never were an absolute amnesty.
Well, we're never an absolute amnesty, but there were a level of comfort, and there were a level of amnesty, to be fair, but they weren't an absolute amnesty. You're right, Stephen, I agree with your point on that. They were never an absolute amnesty because they had the opportunity of fresh evidence came forward. But I think the key to it is, Stephen, that the point I'm trying to make is nobody was ever aware that such letters were issued. It was this underhand, backdoor dealing that was ongoing. And let me be clear about it. Sinn Féin had a right to raise the issue of on the runs at every stage, and they did so. But we never agreed to anything. Indeed, David Trimble's proposal was that they would come back and face the courts, and if they were not guilty, they would be released. If they weren't, if they were guilty, they would serve their time. But the point is, we have raised the issue of the definition of a victim at every stage in the process. But have we got a positive resolution to that, Stephen? No, we haven't. And the point that I'm making is we continue to have this one-sided process where some people from one section of the community get more than they deserve and others don't get what they rightly deserve. I think it's a shame that the real victims of our society do not have the proper definition.
Tom, just let me come back to the letters just one more time. If you were to write to the police now and say, am I wanted for any crime, and the police wrote back to you and said, no, we're not pursuing you for any crime at this moment in time, what would be the difference in you doing that and a so-called on the run?
I think the difference is, Stephen, I have never been on the run. Why were these people on the run in the first place? I'm sure most of these people were on the run simply because they feared they were going to be captured. They feared they were going to be caught up with for investigation or questioning into some terrorist activity. That is why they were on the run. A number of these people, and it is quite clear, obviously have terrorist backgrounds. Some of these people commit heinous crimes in our society. And that is the difference, Stephen. I think if I were to say to you, if you got one of those letters, well, that would be perfectly acceptable and reasonable, because you've never been on the run, Stephen, either.
Okay. Tom, thank you very much indeed. Morning to you.